Welcome back, everyone. We are at the last panel of the McGill Education Summit, and this panel will be about international and out-of-province students. If you're just tuning in now, my name is Errol Solomon. I'm the External Affairs Officer of the PGSS. So what we're going to do is hear from five panelists. I'm going to ask each of them to briefly introduce themselves, and then we'll start down at the far end. I'll give each of the panelists up to 5 minutes to provide introductory remarks. After then, we will go to the audience for some questions, and then I also have some questions prepared, which have been sent to the panelists if no one has any questions from the audience. So, Mr. Mooney.
Thank you. My name is Jonathan Mooney. I'm the Secretary General of the Postgraduate Student Society.
Do we just introduce ourselves?
Introduce yourselves, please, and then we'll start with Jonathan.
Okay, cool. I'm Robin Reed Fraser, and I'm the VP External of the SMU, the Student Society of McGill University, this year.
I'm Jonathan Stern. I'm a professor in art history and communication studies.
I'm Al Schreier. I'm a physiology professor, and this year I'm president of the McGill Association of University Teachers.
And I'm Pierre Moreau, the executive director of planning, and I like to add and delivering. So planning and institutional analysis, and I'm also senior advisor to the principal on policy development.
Great, thank you all. So Jonathan.
If it would be okay, I think it might be best for Dr. Moreau to present first. He has some slides which I asked him to bring so that it could highlight what exactly are the differences in tuition between international and out-of-province and Quebec students, and it might help inform the rest of the discussion, if that's okay.
All right, sounds good.
Okay, this will be really quick. So I just want to make it simple and show you the structure of the tuition fees for four categories of students. I've tried to make it simple. So Quebec resident, Canadian out of Quebec residents, international students are the last two columns, but international students that registered into regulated programs, I'll explain that, and then deregulated programs. So the first point is that everybody pays the basic Quebec tuition fees. This year, $2,168. And that is a basis for everyone. Then Canadian students and international students pay differential fees, forfaitaire in French. And you can see that the amount paid by each category of student is different. So the Canadian students pay an extra $3,690. To come to a total of $5,858. This is set by the Quebec government that dictates this tuition fees, and the Quebec government calculates the tuition fees by looking at the Canadian average, where they subtract Quebec from the average. So the average of all the other provinces in Canada, and this is what is charged to Canadian students. So basically, if you go into another province, you'll probably pay something similar to what other Canadians are paying when they're coming to Quebec. On the international students, the differential fee that is added to the 2,168 here, it represents $11,300, roughly. And then in the deregulated programs, the differential fees is roughly $21,000. Then there is a part of this that is taken back by the government. And that, in this case, represents $295, which goes to student aid. And so I want to point out this first point because this is a major advocacy item for us. So working closely with the principal and with the VP External Affairs Relations, Olivier Marcel, sitting there and looking at his BlackBerry. And, you know, external affairs people are always on the BlackBerry. And so here, our major advocacy point is trying to get back this money, because our students from Canada, out of province, and international cannot apply to get student aid from the Quebec government. They're not allowed, and so they're paying for a service that is not offered to them. So we think that this is unfair. Then we get a government grant. So this is not tuition fees, but the money that we're getting from the government. The grant itself is around $6,000. We get a grant for every student from Quebec, from Canada, and within the regulated international programs, but not for the deregulated programs. And so the last point here shows the net that we get for every student. And so the tuition fees here plus the grant minus the student aid clawback gives us here the amount that we have, and which is roughly $7,900, so let's say $8,000 per student. So we get the same amount of money when we recruit Canadian students, and we get exactly the same amount of money when we recruit international students that come into regulated programs. The deregulated programs were allowed by the Quebec government for students registering into six disciplines, so it's more than one program, but the disciplines are physical sciences, computer science, engineering, mathematics, law, and management. Sorry? 30 seconds. So the next slide in 20 seconds will be the money that McGill is giving back to the system, to the government, from the tuition fees it collected from its own students. And this is shown here. When we look at the Canadian students, McGill collects from our students that are contributing to $27 million, and this is 65% of the entire province. And then when we look at international students, our students are paying a total of $48 million that is going back to the government, compared to others here, 69. So here we represent 40%. So altogether, the differential fees that are taken back by the government from McGill represents about half of what the government is collecting. So there is no incentives for us to recruit a Canadian out of province or an international student in a regulated program, because we need to give back the money that that the students have paid. And then this amount of this amount here is redistributed by the government into the university system. So out of our $76 million, we get back $24 million, which represents our share of 15%, and $52 million are left to be distributed among the other universities. So we contribute to $16 million to the UQ system, $15 million to Université de Montréal, $9 million for Laval, and so on, that are given back to the other universities. So that's a second major advocacy point for us, where we're trying to say that we need that money to take care of the students we recruit. They're paying those extra fees, and they're not getting anything back from it. We have to supply everything to take care of them.
Great, thank you so much. So I want to go now down to Jonathan Mooney.
Could you go back a slide, Dr. Moho?
Yep.
Okay, so I'm an international student, or I was an international student. Now I'm a Quebec resident. I come from the United States, and I came to McGill, and I really like Montreal, so I stayed here. And I think this is the case for a lot of students who do come from out of province, who do come from outside the country. This is a great city. It's a great university, and a lot of people want to stay. And the question is, I think for us, you know, what do international students bring to the table when it comes to the Quebec system, and what do they get out of the system? And I think that within Quebec society, there's a sense that perhaps international students are coming to our universities, they're gaining these skills, and they're going back home, and we're paying for it. And there's a real fear that maybe international students, out-of-province students, are not really good for Quebec society. And I think that that's not a reasonable perspective to take on the issue. I think that having diversity, having people coming from different cultures, having people coming from different backgrounds adds value to our system. I think that the fact that a lot of people will stay in Quebec society is about 30% of those students who come from out of the country end up staying in Quebec society. They end up paying taxes. They end up getting jobs and contributing. This shows that, you know, the government has a real interest in trying to attract these students to Quebec. And it's not a lose-lose situation for the two parties. It's really a win-win situation for the Quebec government, for Quebec society as a whole, and for international students. I really want to make that point to start off because I think it's a really important point. Then the question becomes, what do we do about the tuition? Because this is a real issue, and it's a real issue that's especially important, I think, for undergraduate students in those, both in the regulated and the deregulated programs. But it's also an issue for graduate students because what we pay is basically the international regulated rates, which is about $15,000, $14,000 or so. And this is a real issue because McGill has said that we want to support students. We want to make sure that any qualified student can come here, and we want, especially in the graduate programs, to be able to provide full funding for all students. Up to about a year and a half ago, there was a program, the MIDUS program, which is in place for graduate students that guaranteed that McGill would offset the differential cost between Quebec rates and international rates for all research students, doctoral students in research disciplines. That program isn't there anymore, and a lot of our students are suffering because they don't have the support from their departments to be able to pursue their studies. A lot of students don't know whether they can go on in their studies. This is a real issue that we have to address. And I guess there's one other little point that I'd like to make, because the question is now, well, what does McGill do? What's in McGill's interest when we look at this graph where we're giving all this money to these other universities? All this money is being clawed back. We're not able to use it for things like student services, which are necessary to support students at the international level who have different needs and different interests. And I think one of the things that's been put forward is, well, let's deregulate more programs, because if we deregulate more programs, we get to keep more money. And I just want to ask a few questions about that that I think we ought to keep in mind as a university, as a community, when we talk about this. I mean, if you look at what happens in deregulated programs, the tuition is much, much greater, the tuition that has to be paid from those students. And I think that one of the things I've asked, and I'm still looking for the data on, has the diversity of our student body, in terms of their socioeconomic background, coming from other countries, has that degraded over the course of time as we've taken this tuition from about $14,000 and have it now almost at $25,000 or higher in certain disciplines, $25,000, $30,000 in certain disciplines? Are we losing a certain diversity that we used to have because we had reasonable tuitions and we got a grant from the government in these regulated programs? And are we now seeing an international population that's composed more of very rich students from very privileged backgrounds and less middle-class students and students who bring a little bit more diversity to our campus? I think it's a really important point. The other question I would ask is, you know, if the government is giving us this much for these disciplines and they think that that's enough for us to educate our students, is it fair to charge the international students in the deregulated programs so much more? And are we actually profit? Are we taking more money in from these students than we're actually putting back into their education in the system? And I think that's a question about values and it's a question about justice. Obviously, McGill is strapped for cash. Obviously, universities in Quebec, throughout Quebec, are strapped for cash, and they're trying to find creative ways to make up the difference. But are we taking a tactic that's going to reduce the diversity of our student population so that we can take in money? And are we not actually putting this money back into what the real cost of the education for those students is? These are questions. I don't know completely what the answers are. I hope we can discuss those today. But I think these are really important things to keep in mind when we talk about international students. Thank you.
Thank you. Robin.
Yeah, cool. Jonathan raised a lot of, I think, really important points, and I guess I wanted to touch on a couple of them and then talk about a couple of other things. Just kind of looking at that, it does make it kind of pretty clear. It did make it very clear how the fee structure in Quebec and at McGill works. And I think that at the conversation yesterday, there were some really interesting points that came up, particularly talking about, well, I mean, we charge so much more to students who are from, well, a bit more, well, yeah, a few thousand more to students who are from outside of Quebec but still within Canada, and a whole lot more to students who are coming from outside of Quebec in the first place, or outside of Canada entirely. The assumption that is based around is that, like, these are students who are going to come here and are going to study here and, like Jonathan was saying, go back to their homes and are not going to stay to kind of contribute to Quebec society and contribute to the tax base. And I wanted to sort of talk a little bit more about some of the other factors that kind of might contribute to that and some of the things that I've been hearing from students who are coming, who are primarily Anglophone, who are coming from outside of Quebec. And one of the main ones that I've heard a lot from a number of people is that students really like Montreal, really love being here. I mean, it's an amazing city in a lot of ways and have really enjoyed their time at McGill. But the thing that is constantly a concern to them is the language barrier, is that there are a lot of students who come here who maybe have a bit of a grasp on French, a lot who don't really at all, and came here kind of expecting to have opportunities to learn and practice speaking in French, and then just end up not having that really available. And so, I mean, this means that ability to stay here over the summer and find work is really difficult. The work that there is like on campus, for example, which is valuable, but those spaces are limited. Other things is like working in the backs of restaurants or that kind of thing. But what I think that needs to be talked about more is like if, and a lot of the conversation that we had yesterday was there was one speaker in particular who was saying that, yeah, you know, we really do want to be able to kind of retain these skilled people in Quebec. And so I think that we need to be thinking about, well, what are better ways to do that? And I think that just like having much more in terms of French language classes, ones that aren't necessarily tied to your academic record, so students in more of a diversity of programs who maybe don't have a lot of electives would be able to access that, things that are maybe more informal because French grammar is not for everybody in the written sense. I can speak to that, but just like to have that chance to get a working knowledge of French so that students do feel like they are confident and can stay here. Yeah, and then I think it's also, there's an interesting study that just kind of thinking about other things that international students do contribute and out of province, but international students in particular, the things that they do contribute while they're here is that like in addition to just their tuition, there is also, I mean, there are all of these other things that they're contributing in terms of economic contributions. So, I mean, students who are coming here are naturally not going to be, you know, they're not going to be staying with their parents, so they're going to be living in apartments, they're going to be accessing services, they're going to be buying food, all of these things that come with, like, living in a place. Yeah, there are some studies that really break down the numbers. And in Quebec, this was a study from 2009, but in Quebec it said that the contribution of international education services to GDP was over $700,000. Yeah, that's another thing to think about. And I guess 30 seconds? Okay. And so I guess my last point that I wanted to talk about is that just from my own experience or people that I've talked to, who come from other countries, is that I feel like there are a lot of students who feel sort of restricted in what they can study because of the economic reality of the country that they're returning to. But I know a lot of students who come here and are studying in engineering primarily because that is one of the things that they can study and know that they have a job to go back to. But I've talked to students who would really like to be studying something else, but just because they do have to be paying these high costs for their tuition and the economic reality of their home country, just don't feel like they can branch out that way. And so I don't know if we'll have time to talk about that, but that's another thing that I think it's important to keep in mind.
Okay, great. Thanks. Thank you, Robin. Jonathan Stern.
General values, and I'm going to talk about my experience specifically, since this is a PGSS event, in relationship to the PhD in international students. And PhD students, especially in arts, are an interesting group because they're actually not a group who's likely to settle in Quebec. They're likely to come do their PhD and go away because that's how academic knowledge production works. And that brings me to my main point and the point I want you to take away from my talk, which is I want to invert the question. The question has been posed to me, with all due respect, Daryl, what do international students add to the university? I believe this is the wrong question to be asking. Let me explain. Do you want a doctor who only refers to knowledge produced in Quebec when treating you? Do you want business people that only refer to knowledge produced in Quebec when they're making business decisions? Lawyers, you get the point. Universities deal in knowledge. That is what we do. We have basically two functions. One is to do basic research that may not be immediately commercially viable and therefore is not necessarily interesting to industry or may never be commercially viable but is socially valuable. And the other is to serve our polity by credentialing people in professions that we need. Both of those things depend on a fundamentally international state of knowledge. Knowledge does not know borders. It is international. And even something as provincial, literally, as Quebec studies, if you look at the field of Quebec studies, which isn't a field I work in very much, but I've occasionally dabbled, the journal Quebec Studies, edited at Duke University, their editorial board comes from all over the world. And of course, there's probably more people outside of Quebec doing Quebec studies than inside Quebec. So even that field is fundamentally international in scope. So what does this have to do with students? Very simple. I'm in dialogue with colleagues all over the world. Who's going to come study with me? Their students. When their students get here to do a PhD, they are structurally second-class citizens. They have to pay more for the same services. And you say, well, you fund them more. I say, okay, that's great. So for my international PhD student, I will do everything I can to get that person in the priority pool for a teaching assistantship. A teaching assistantship, by the way, which pays $8,000, which is exactly what the university, well, it's not exactly $8,000, but it's $8,000 give or take. Huh? Just under five per term. Well, that's good. Well, okay, so that's about $800 more per year than the University of Illinois paid to teaching assistants when I enrolled in 1993. So you say, well, okay, which by the way means that we're not competitive with other universities we claim to be competing with, right? When people talk about it, they talk about it in terms of wages in Quebec, but in fact, the labor market for graduate student labor is an international market. We are competing with a lot of universities that pay their teaching assistants much more, even in Canada, right? So you say, well, okay, you give them a TA and a research assistantship. Well, now you have somebody who's working 30 hours a week outside of their own studies to make ends meet, right? They're not eligible for the grants that come from the Canadian or Quebec government, and so they're twice as hard to fund. We had the Midas Fellowship. We lost it. I understand it was for financial reasons and also because in some fields you can actually write grants that cover tuition costs. You can in the humanities and social sciences, to my knowledge. Obviously, some people come from countries where they can bring fellowships with them. I have, I've had American students on Fulbrights, for instance. But it seems to me a fundamentally messed up situation where at the highest level of education, at the sort of capstone of everything we do educationally, the doctoral degree, the fundamental economic arrangement is one that makes international students, the students who are the very sort of source of this international traffic and knowledge by moving around, makes them out to be second-class citizens. And I would add, you know, in terms of differential fees and things like that, for PhD students who are doing research assistant and teaching assistant work, I won't talk about professional programs because I don't really know them, we're already getting surplus value out of them, right? A grad student you hire to teach a course is paid less than a professor who teaches the course. You can make arguments, it's training, it's expertise, whatever. The university gets a bargain. Research assistant, same story. If they didn't do the work, the professor would do the work or the work wouldn't get done. Again, a bargain. So, in essence, we are taxing our international grad students twice by virtue of the current differential fee structure. And I understand that a lot of this money goes back to Quebec and doesn't come back to McGill, but it's a problem we have to deal with as a university, as a truly international university. We should be treating our international students at least as well as we treat our Quebec and Canadian students. And there's lots more I can say, but I'll leave it at that.
Great, thank you. And finally, Al.
Well, just to pick up a bit where Jonathan left off. I've had graduate students in my lab, and I would say that probably right now almost all of them are outside the province. It's because it's competitive, and we tend to bring the best students we can, in at least at the graduate level. So what ends up, we do the best work we can. So it's by bringing strong students, international students, it strengthens McGill, it strengthens the fabric of our research, it strengthens the institution, and when the students graduate, they go away being graduates of McGill. So it's interesting that at one point, I'm a faculty of medicine, that the president of Duke University, the president of Harvard, the president of Stanford at one time were graduates of McGill's medical school. Right now, the president of Rockefeller is he's actually a Quebecois, but he's a graduate of McGill. And so we have people that are going from McGill around the world, and they're our ambassadors. This is what builds McGill's reputation and makes McGill a great international university. So without having people coming in and out of McGill, I think that we lose a lot of the quality of the university. And it applies, of course, to undergrads as well. We have these undergraduates coming in. This is not to minimize in any way our Quebec students, because we actually bring in the best Quebec students we can, but we give opportunities to other students the way we have our students going elsewhere in Canada. When they graduate, very often, it's not the idea of our keeping our graduate students here. Very often we say, go somewhere else. Get a different kind of training and a background. And ultimately, they may come back to Quebec and may come back to McGill. And I have an anecdote. I have one of my students who came from Ontario, was one of my students. He ended up doing an MD, PhD. And where is he now? He's a neurosurgeon at the MNI. So here's a person that came to Quebec, stayed in Quebec, made a life in Quebec, married a Quebecois girl, and began a family, and is now Quebecer. He's here, and he's contributing to society. And he's not unique. There's many other people that come here, and they contribute to the whole environment of the city and to Montreal and to Quebec. What else is there? I think that's Paul. I can go on also, but I think for the moment that's enough.
All right. Thank you very much. So I'm now going to open it up to some questions. Does anyone in the audience have any questions that they would like to ask any of the panelists, to one or all or more than one panelist? If not, then I have some questions. Yep.
I have maybe two questions for Monsieur Moreau. La première, c'est juste une précision. Je suis désolée si je l'ai manqué dans votre présentation, mais vous avez dit qu'il n'y avait pas d'avantages financiers dans le système actuel pour les universités, donc d'accueillir plus d'étudiants internationaux et hors province. Là, c'est vraiment juste une précision. Est-ce qu'il n'y a pas un 10% sur les montants forfaitaires qui peut être retenu par les universités?
Oui.
OK. Puis ça, c'est...
Alors... En français, oui, sur les programmes internationaux qui sont encore réglementés, le gouvernement du Québec nous permet d'ajouter 10% à la facture pour prendre en charge une partie infime des coûts de recrutement à l'étranger, et on n'arrive même pas à se rendre à prendre soin des étudiants lorsqu'ils sont ici. Mais oui, il y a 10%.
OK. Puis, une autre question, c'est à propos des programmes qui sont déréglementés. Je voudrais savoir comment le coût de ces programmes-là, comment les frais de scolarité de ces frais-là sont décidés, et puis comment ils se comparent ici à McGill avec les autres universités du Québec?
Bien, alors, c'est décidé par le bureau du provost et du deputy provost, Morton Mendelson, et le taux qu'on a est à peu près la moyenne canadienne. parce que évidemment on est aussi en compétition avec les autres universités canadiennes. L'Université de Toronto, UBC sont pour nous des universités qui recrutent dans le même genre d'étudiants, qui visent l'excellence. Et nos frais de scolarité sont à peu près à la moyenne canadienne.
Great, thank you. Any other questions?
Well, I'd just like to make a point. Ron Critchley, I'm president of Manassa, but I'm also an undergraduate advisor. And one of the questions I ask the international students when they come in is, how do you feel about tuition? You know, when we start to have a conversation that goes a little bit beyond what course they need. And I've yet to hear anyone say it's too expensive. The Americans, almost to a man or woman, say it's a great deal compared to, you know, the Ivy League or the big schools in the state they're from. The international students who've come into the Desautels MBA program, I approached a few about this time, I think, last year, and said, what do you think about the rates? And everybody said, no problem. We're getting a quality education, and we're willing to pay for it. So, you know, there's a bit of a disjointed reaction, I think, from the student body at times. If you're from Ontario, if you're from Eastern Ontario or you're from BC or something, yeah, you're going to pay a little bit more. But heck, when I went to Ontario, I paid a bit more. That's just part of the deal. I think the big thing is to look at the global issue, and the global issue is McGill doesn't keep the money it generates. And that's the issue. And what's happened is you've got almost a university welfare system in the province with dependence upon the machine, and the machine is McGill. And it's wrong, and it should stop. But until our confrères decide that it should stop, it's going to continue. And I think the best message anybody here in this room can give out, if they love McGill, that is, leave us alone, let us get on with the job. Thanks.
Thank you. Would any of the panelists like to respond? Jonathan Mooney.
Just to be a bit provocative, I'll ask, you know, did you ask any of the students who didn't come here because it was too expensive? exactly. And I guess to follow up on the point, because I do agree that there's a real problem that international students are paying into a financial aid program that they can't have access to. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. That's unjust. That's not fair. There's also the problem that the money that they're paying is being redistributed, and McGill can't use it to support those students here at the university. And I agree with that, and I think that, you know, anybody who does have a concern about whether we're taking care of these students would agree with that point. But I would like to pose a question, which I sort of made in my opening remarks to Mr. Dr. Moreau, about, you know, the government has this table de ponderation, which looks at all the different disciplines and what the weighting factors are and how much it's supposed to cost to educate a student. And in the sciences and engineering, it's a bit heavier, and the arts is a bit lighter. If you take that calculation, I've tried to do it myself, it seems like we're charging the deregulated programs more than what MELS and CREPUC have agreed is the actual cost of educating a student in those disciplines. So are we actually charging international students in the deregulated programs more than it costs to educate them? And is that just? So I'll put that question to you.
Well, the way the government determines the grille de financement and how it weighs the is looking at all of the system at once. And so this does not apply very well to research-intensive universities, because when they look at the average cost, in research-intensive universities, the cost is higher than what you'll find as an average. And so what we have is a Canadian average where other universities are covering their cost also, and so we get right into that same place on the market.
Anyone else on the panel want to respond? Al?
Well, not quite on that, but related to the finances coming in through MIDAS. You know, we apply for grants. The way the budgeting goes, if you apply to IPI CIHR, they say, well, the fellowships should be around $18,000 or $20,000 a year. That's CIHR. When you get up to the PhD level or graduate student, you know, doctoral level, you're talking about somebody coming for 5 years, let's say. And at that level, there's no way that after an undergraduate education, they can afford to go out and get all that money to pay for a graduate program. It's just, they can't be in that much debt, you know, going to go on to an academic career. And it costs, roughly speaking, even for a master's student, some of the range about $30,000 a year to fund somebody coming in from abroad. Because within our department, we have a certain minimum for living and then a certain amount on top for tuition. So if you don't have that money for the student, you don't get the student, which means that we're going to be cutting back down on getting international students. There's no doubt about it, because we can't afford it. And of course, with the tightening up of the funding at the in the with the tri-councils, it makes it even harder. So I think it's really a serious issue, and I underline what Ron said 100%, because I think we need to keep that money here in order to be able to fund our programs.
Okay. Robin?
Yeah, I guess one other thing that I sort of wanted to mention when we're kind of talking about this issue of, for example, like, yeah, paying into a financial aid student system that students from outside of Quebec don't have access to. I think it's also important to take in or keep in mind that there are like other really important things that that can act as barriers. Other important things that aren't very accessible for students who are not from Quebec. So, for example, SMU runs a daycare and a nursery, and we're fortunate in that it is part of the $7 a day subsidized daycare program. But there's only like a specific. My understanding is there are only specific international students who can actually have their children enrolled in a $7 a day subsidized daycare, which, you know, makes a certain, I guess within a certain logic, makes sense because they're not contributing to the Quebec tax base that would be paying for it. But, you know, that's one other barrier that on top of like all of these other costs, just to be having to search around to find childcare and to not be able to access this more affordable childcare, I mean, that's another thing that I think is a serious concern for a lot of students and could prevent them from completing their degree quickly because they can't take on that full course load. So, just another point.
Thank you. Yeah, Jonathan.
I'll be really brief. Thanks for your response, Dr. Moreau. Sorry to keep talking about the deregulated programs, but it's a real interest of mine. I'm not sure I totally agree with what you said. I think that, as the provost mentioned earlier today, and as McGill has been saying, it's really important to keep the research budget and the operating budget separate, because what goes into the operating budget and what it can be used for is a really different thing from what's in the research budget. So I'm not totally convinced that a research-intensive university is going to cost more money to educate a student there than it would at another university, especially, you know, if we look at, you know, the indirect cost of research. They actually give less money to bigger universities because there's supposed to be an economy of scale. So it seems to me like what we might be doing is we're looking at our neighbors saying we want to be competitive and we're charging whatever the market will bear for this tuition without actually looking what it really costs to us. And I think that raises some questions about social justice for me, which concern me. So I'll just put that out there as a question.
Okay. Did you want to respond quickly?
I'm not sure that we're the best use of what we can say today is about fixing tuition fees, you know, a few thousand dollars less or a few thousand dollars more. What I would like to address is the question that was asked to us, and about what the graduate students like you, graduate students, and like you, Robin, contribute, coming from Whitehorse, contribute to our society. And I would like to just say that after traveling to China and to India, I came back animated with a sense of urgency, really, not panic, but urgency, and was convinced that we were condemned to innovate. And innovation, not only technology innovation, but social innovation, but that we need to innovate and continue to innovate. And I think that students from outside the province, Canadian or international students, really are a blessing to us and contribute to provoke collisions of ideas. Our students are, the Quebec residents are mingling with international students and out-of-province students, and thinking in a different way at the end of the of their degree, of their, and I think that Quebec is very fortunate to have McGill to contribute to this. And I think that tuition fees or other means, and I agree with Ron, I don't think that tuition fees is that of an issue. I've seen people thinking that if they're low, it's because our education is not of a high quality. So outside our province, there's a lot of that. I think that if we should concentrate on ways where we could staple a certificate of residency to your diploma when you get out of your degree, so that we made you like Montreal, we made you like Quebec, and that you want to stay and contribute to this society and Canada. I think those are the real issues that we're thinking about and trying to see how we could do that. So with Olivier, we work with the government on the international scene. We try to find ways that would make it easier for the students that we recruit to stay if they would like to.
That was more than 30 seconds.
That's okay. So we do have another question from the audience.
Hi, I feel like I've asked a lot of questions today. But my name is Mona Luxon. For those of you who don't know me, I'm a student in urban planning, a PhD student. I'm an international student. I moved here from the US in part because of McGill, in part because of Montreal. I think that's the case for a lot of people. I'm going to disagree with the gentleman from Manasa and Mr. Mooney on this question of redistributing fees into a financial aid system that we don't access. I think that the student body at McGill is part of what makes it an attractive place. The fact that McGill is in Quebec is part of what makes it an interesting place, and making university education accessible to people in Quebec should be one of our priorities, whether or not we're international students. And so I don't begrudge the Quebec government my tuition money at all. I think that it's great that they're using it. But yeah, I wanted to touch a little bit on this idea that Robin brought up earlier, that McGill is sort of using Montreal as part of its marketing strategy. I think that's great. I think it's wonderful that we're coming here to this wonderful city. And then we really have no way to integrate into it. Not only after the fact, but I find that most of my colleagues at McGill have very little interaction with the city outside of the Anglo bubble that we live in. And that's really sad. And as someone who came here in order to be able to partake of Montreal's unique culture, I find it really disappointing that the culture around McGill has isolated me from that. So I'm wondering if you might talk a little bit about how the university could integrate more with the community, both during our time here and also helping people find jobs and stay in this province if they so choose. Thank you.
Okay, so we'll start with Jonathan Stern.
Well, I mean, I think partly it's a pedagogical problem, which is, you know, I wonder how many professors teach like McGill is in Montreal and in Quebec. I don't know who made the point about, I think you made the point about non-credit French courses. That's a great idea. Because the main obstacle, quite frankly, to integration is French. And a lot of that's cultural, too. So when I came, I'm an immigrant also. I came from the United States. I'm a Canadian and Quebec citizen now as well. So I think of myself as binational. When I came here, you know, I got the advice everybody else gets from at least my social circle. Oh, you should live in Mile End or Plateau. It'll be really fun. And, of course, it is fun, and you can speak English all the time. My wife and I initially settled in a neighborhood called Hochelaga-Maisonneuve, which is, our joke was, we lived further east than any other McGill professors. Although we heard about some guy in the sciences out by Peanut, so it may or may not be true. But let me tell you, like going shopping at the Marché Maisonneuve, the people were really nice. They would answer me in English with the one sentence of English that they knew. And then, if I actually wanted to communicate with the people, I had to do it in French. Now, the result of that is I have wonderful transactional French, and I can be very polite, although I might be a little hard to understand. The intellectual spoken and listening French is not as good as it should be. Why? Because I haven't made the time to take the classes. But I view that as my fault. Like, I don't think that that's entirely the university's fault. So we can encourage people, and I certainly think something like non-credit French courses is a great idea. And we can do university community partnerships. John Galati was saying in the last panel, we should be going out into the community and telling people also that they should be coming here and making McGill more of the city. And one of the things we could really easily do that we don't is like go and recruit in poor Anglophone communities where the obstacle isn't language, it's other things. And that would be, those are all things that we can do for not very much money that will help McGill integrate into Montreal.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to respond? Robin?
Okay. I guess I wanted to just quickly expand a little bit on what you were talking about with the community university partnerships, because that was, this year was the launch of a really cool kind of celebration of community engagement, which was Community Engagement Day that took place on October 5th. And what it was several hundred people from across the McGill community, mostly students, but basically it was run by the Social Equity Diversity Education Office, and they had set up partnerships with a whole bunch of community organizations, and students just participated in one of these projects where they went and got to like spend time with a couple of community organizations doing something on the ground with kind of the various constituents there. I've heard from students at some of these discussions that we've had a real desire to have more opportunities like that, or like the Community University Research Exchange Program, which operates out of Cupar McGill. People don't really know that much about it, and I don't think it gets nearly as much kind of support as it could, but those kinds of things I think that the language aspect is so important. I think there's a lot more work that we could be doing with that, finding ways to interact with students from other like Francophone universities, for example. But I think that this idea of having opportunities for students to be doing research or doing work with community organizations around Montreal would just make Montreal just open up in so many ways for a lot of students. So,
hey, Jonathan Mooney.
Those are some really good points that you're raising, and I would agree with you. I don't begrudge the government using the tax that I pay or the tuition that I pay to support a system like the RESO system, which is really important for Quebec society. And I think that if we are to go to a model where we want to change the mechanism by which we look at McGill tuition that's paid by international students and use it to provide support to those students, what's going to happen to the gap in money that would have gone to the RESO otherwise? And I think that's a really, really good point, and we can't just deny them all that funding and expect them to be able to continue on. And so there needs to be a mechanism in place there. On the other hand, I might disagree. I'm not sure if I understood your point. I think that it is important to provide some kind of financial aid to international students, because otherwise we have a very, very homogeneous body of the top 1% from various other countries, and I'm not sure that's going to give us the same level of diversity we want here at McGill. And so I think that having access to that financial aid is something that's important. And I would really agree with what my previous two speakers said. I happen to move too close to the Hochelaga Maisonneuve area, and shopping at Metro Frontenac is very different from shopping at Metro on Park Street. It's a very different experience, and it's a great experience that lets you get into the community. I would agree with Robin that we need to make more access to French courses. They're not big, money-making systems within McGill. Having access to French courses, making more French courses accessible to people outside the French program actually costs the university money. But it's really important. It's really important to let people actually have that experience so that they can stay in Quebec society and contribute and be able to integrate into the community. And I would also add that for graduate students, there are only two places in each course for graduate students. For each French course, and graduate students are craving this experience. They really want it. One thing that McGill has done, which I have to give credit for, they've subsidized the rate so that graduate students have to pay only the Quebec rate and international students have to pay only the Quebec rate for these classes, so it's a lot more affordable. That's one good thing, but we need to make more spaces available. That's the other thing. And I would agree that organizations like QPIRB, CKUT, Community Engagement Day, sometimes the student societies allow people a better opportunity to integrate with the community, and I think that we need to support those programs.
Can I just say one other thing, which is McGill is the only place in Montreal where you can go to learn French. And so
you know, we've got, I mean, we can do things ourselves. We can also form partnerships with organizations that offer inexpensive French courses for immigrants with the grad student in our department several years ago. Took a class at the YMCA, and it was, I don't remember how cheap it was, but it was really, really spectacular. Cheap, it was conversational French, and not with other McGill students, but with immigrants from all over. And so that also gets people out into the city. So we might think more proactively about partnerships with organizations outside of McGill to facilitate that, because it'll probably be less expensive than offering more non-credit French classes in the university.
So if I can just build on what you said and answer your question, I think that the students themselves that are abroad, so you here, I think have a lot to do in trying to integrate into the culture and the society where you're coming in. And having been on the other side, having in a past life been a dean of a faculty where we wanted to send students abroad, I would have lots of anecdotes to tell you how they would integrate into, and never anyone asked for a course in Spanish when we were sending them into Mexico, or English when they went to the States. We were focusing on North America. And I remember talking to a student in the mechanical engineering that was leaving, and I asked him, ¿habla español? And he was going to Guanajuato in Mexico, and he said, oh, I've learned the verbs because I think they're the motor of the sentence. He was a mechanical engineer. So, and that's it. He left. And a few months after that, I visited his university. His name was Pilot, and everyone called him Piloto. He had organized a student association because he realized they didn't have any. He was the president, and he was doing this in a really bad Spanish. But everybody was around him. And so I think that's the type of experience that you get if you... I think it also exemplifies what I was trying to say when students from out of province come here, that to have people like that that come here and mingle and stimulate, provoke, etc.
Thank you. Al, would you like... Okay. Does anyone else from the audience have one last question? If not, anyone on the panel have some last words? All right. So I'd like to thank everyone on the panel and everyone for attending the second and last day of the McGill Education Summit.